Succession number 27193, Reel 11.
Sergeant Major Conn, Reel 11.
You're saying you've got a tropical disease in northern Nigeria. Did they find out what it was?
Not really. They thought it might have been a ringworm, you know, but it wasn't. It was something that was in there, but I didn't find out what it was. But anyway, they did it cured us at the finish. And this is when the wife had came down from York. She'd living with her mother in York at that time, and she came down and stayed with my parents in Grays while I was in hospital and that. And then when I was well enough, because when I came back from West Africa, I went straight to York, and because on there I couldn't hold anything down, you know, the pain in the stomach. And when I was in Liverpool, where we docked, went into a pub and they said something, what was it, something in a drink anyway. But oh no, it was terrible. And because when I got home, I was yellow with a mepicrine in that hand, you know.
That's against malaria, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. So anyway, I always remember walking, coming into the street, and somebody said, "Hey, comes a cowboy." That's it. But anyway, the wife at that time, she was very upset. And she went out to get the doctors and everything. She went up in the one-way street on a bicycle, and the cop would just give us a ticket off and let her come back. And then we went back down to Essex, and I went near the hospital, at the Tilbury Hospital, as I said. And that is when they worked on this. Oh, God, I was in a state. Mm-hmm. But anyway, as I said, the Harley Street specialist, he found that he used to feed me with these black bombers and things. Oh, God, they were terrible. And of course, you had to produce a stool afterwards, you know what I mean? That was the worst part about it, that. But anyway, as I said, eventually cured us. And then I was then posted to Lincoln, to the depot. And
because you're still, that was still your regiment, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's still right, still in Lincoln.
Yes,
yeah,
cat badge.
Yeah, and I was at the depot for a short while. And then I went to, got posted to Harrogate, a junior leader school. And I was there for a while.
What were you doing at Harrogate, at the junior leaders?
The boys' regiment, you know.
Yes.
I was there, and I was a colour sergeant then, of course, because I was colour sergeant while I was in Benaya.
What were your duties as colour sergeant at the...
Well, I should accommodation and everything, you know.
Yes.
Everything I got through.
So you're dealing with administration?
That's right, yeah.
Did you get involved in instruction at all? Did you get involved in giving instruction at Harrogate?
No. I wasn't there very long anyway. And I used to travel with a guardsman from Imperial Barracks to Harrogate from York. And then after that I got posted to Brookbrook Barracks in Warwickshire.
What sort of people were the junior leaders in those days, the lads going
young
into
boys,
the regiment?
Young boys,
What were they like?
Well, like young soldiers, you know, that was it, boy soldiers. Well, some of them were interesting, very, what do you call it, you know. But as I said, I was only doing the administrative side, you know, and that sort of thing. The instructors were drilling them and one thing and another that. But they were doing everything what the soldiers should do, you know, learning the manoeuvres, map reading, all that sort of stuff, you know.
And did you think they were like to be good soldiers?
Some of them, yes. Some of them were very keen. Some of them very keen, yeah. You had one or two who dropped out, you know, after a bit of training.
But, I mean, that happens in any training.
It happens in anybody, yeah.
You've got a wastage.
That's right, yeah, you always do.
Dropping out.
That's right, yeah. But I hadn't been there. As I say, I got posted to Broadbrook. And it was there I met my mate, old Jock Young, who had joined the Lincolns at the same time as I did, but he came from the Royal Scots Fusiliers. What a boy. And he was doing colour sergeant at that time as well. So while I was at Prudbrook, it was only a sort of a holding unit again.
Yeah.
And we were then put on a draft. Now, he had his family at in Warwick, at Leamington, actually. And anyway, we got posted to the military mission in Greece, in Athens. Mm. And I was colour sergeant there. And he went on to the, what do you call it, mission inside Athens itself.
Yes.
We were in the barracks, and he was on the administrative side, the court marshals and that, you know, mm-hmm. as he used to deal with. But anyway, as I say, I was in Greece there, in Athens for a while, all that time, and what I was there for about 12 months.
Yes, what was your job when you were in
quartermaster.
You were quartermaster?
Yeah, quartermaster sergeant, yeah. Mm. And issuing stuff all over again. We used to issue some of the Greek army with their uniforms and that. Mm. Well, they only got one uniform, that's all.
What was the condition of the Greek army at that time?
Well, they were having problems up on the Granus Mountains, you know, with the Itais and that, you know. And they were still having trouble. They used to have what they call an oiki day. Oiki. Oiki, that's the old Greek oiki. Oiki for no, I think it was. It meant no, didn't it? You know, because the Itais was after that day. But I was there till 1950.
Mm.
Yeah.
Where were you based then? Were you in Athens itself?
In Athens, no, in the barracks, just on the outskirts of Athens.
Athens.
Yeah.
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 And were you serving primarily the British Army?
Mostly British Army at the time, yeah. Mostly British Army. Because we had instructors there who were training the Greek Army, you know.
Yeah.
And we used to give us an indexy badge, what they call it, indexy badge, which was half a crown a week. That's it, you know, half a crown you got for that.
Mm.
You had the Greek colours on, you know, crown and the Greek colours, some across and some down, like, you know, green, what do you call it, blue and white.
How do you get on with the Greeks?
Not bad, really, you know, we got all right, but I used to deal a lot with the married families there as well, and they used to issue them with their rations and stuff and coal and that, you know, for the quarters and that, and so that's part of the job, anyway. That was part of the, what they called, besides clothing and that.
Yes. Who were you working for then? Who were you reporting to?
The British military mission.
Yeah. So who was your officer, as it were? In
well, we had a we had a colonel in charge of the barracks there. You know, that's it.
So the colonel in charge of the barracks, and is that the base for the British all
that's
British,
right,
British forces in Greece?
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And so was your job then purely administrative?
That's right, again, yeah.
Mm. What sort of staff did you have to help you?
Well, we had what they call it, like a normal, what they call it, had about five or six chaps. So, like, you know, when they had the, when you had the money quarters, they had to look after the money quarters, the furniture and stuff like that, and the needs.
Yeah.
And they had the coal men, used to take the coal out and others with the rations, because you used to get English rations and that, you know what I mean. And you used to get it through the quartermaster stores.
Were you able to get anything by local purchase?
Oh, yes, you can buy stuff from the local markets, yeah.
What sort of stuff would you get?
There was lamb and stuff like that, very young, and venison, and also fruit and vegetables. Yeah, I used to get that local purchase. Yeah. But then, as I say, I was only there for about 12 months, and I then went back and joined the battalion
in
1950 in Ishmaelia.
Which battalion was that? First battalion?
First battalion then. Yeah. It was the first battalion of the Lincolns then.
Ishmaelia. What were they doing in Ishmaelia?
Well, they were in the camp, what was it, North Camp in Ishmaelia. It was a normal place for the, what they call it, the whole battalion was in there.
Tented camp or hutted?
Pardon?
Tented or hutted?
Hutted camp. Mm. It was a hutted camp. And that was when I got, the wife came out then, in 1950, yeah.
Mm.
And she came out and she was in sort of substandard accommodation, which was wooden huts, and
Was that provided by the army?
Oh, yes.
So you didn't have to find that yourself?
Oh, no, yeah. We got that by the army. Mm. Although some of them who'd come out had gotten private accommodation down in Ishmaelia, yes. You know, which is quarters and that, which had been accommodated. But, we had we had the old stoves and that. Everything issued by the army. Mm. And then that's when the trouble started out there.
What sort of trouble?
Well, it was the Egyptians had a go. First of all, King Abdullah was assassinated up in the Transjordan.
Yes.
And our battalion then was sent up there.
To Jordan?
Up to Aqaba.
To Aqaba?
Aqaba.
How did you move to Aqaba?
By air.
What sort of aircraft were they using?
They were, what do you call it? Oh, God, what do they call them?
The Dakotas?
Dakotas. Mm. Yeah, with the Dakotas. Mm. And of course, one of the planes crash landed there with a group. Yeah. And it was then used as a headquarters for the guard and that, which used to separate the Israelis from the Arabs and that. Mm.
How much notice did you have of this move? How much notice did you have of the move to Aqaba?
Oh, only about 48 hours. Oh. Yeah, we had to do it quick. We had to go down from Ishmaelia down to the other one on the lakes. Oh, Christ, what was the name of it? Ishmaelia?
Port Tufik?
No, not as far down as that. Not as far down as that. Fayed.
Fayed.
Fayed. Mm. That was it. Fayed. And then we had to get on the craft from there. And out to what you call it, Rilent. And
what was there at Aqaba when you arrived?
Well, there was nothing. There was only an oasis. It was bloody hot, I know that. Mm. Bloody flies. And all the water, we had to put these tablets in, you know what I mean?
Purification tablets.
Blimey, God, it tasted terrible. Mm. And then,
what was your appointment in the battalion then when you arrived? You arrived at Ishmaelia, and what was your job?
Well, as a Khalistan again.
As Khalistan.
I was in charge of all rations, pay and everything.
What, for the battalion or for company?
For the company, yeah.
Which company?
C company. That support company I had then.
Okay, so you're a colour sergeant of support company.
Yeah.
What does support company consist of?
It consists of the machine gunners, the pioneers, mortars, signallers, a whole lot. Mm. God, that was it. Yeah.
And what did support company do when it got to Aqaba? What?
Well, they took up the role, you know what I mean, as a defence platoon, like, you know, in the area. Because we had the machine guns, the anti-tank, mortars and everything like that, and signallers, you know.
Yeah. Did you still have carriers at that time?
Pardon? Yes, we had carriers as well.
That was part of us.
Yeah. Carrier platoon, yeah.
So you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about 6 platoons altogether.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they did the carriers go with you when you flew out to Aqaba?
Yes, but there were some we had to take over who was from the Lancashire Fusiliers.
All right. Were the Lancashire Fusiliers still in place when you arrived?
Yes. Yeah.
So you were reinforcement, effectively.
And they went back to Ishmaelia. Yeah?
All right.
And while we're there, while we're in Aqaba, that is when the Arab Legion. Mm. Went flying through to the Israelis, you know, right through our lines, all the way through. And about 3 days later, the cloud of dust and all come back, chased out by the Israelis. Mm. And we had the frontier, and we were on there, and there was Jews, or Israelis they call them, on this side. And there were a lot of English blokes, some from Leeds and London and that, you know, because you used to talk and that's it. So it was no difficult job that at all, you know. Mm. Was to just keep them out, stop them from getting into the towards the Arabs. But the Arabs took a beating there, I can tell you.
Did they show any signs of wanting to get into Jordan?
No, they just wanted to keep them Arabs out. That's all. Mm. Stop them coming into Jordan itself. Mm. But anyway, at that time we had the Magpie came out. We had a detachment of the Lancashire Fusiliers still with us. They hadn't moved down, and they had the bell of the ship of the Euralius, which took them into the Dardanelles.
Yes.
And of course, the Navy, the Magpie, of which Prince Philip was part of, the crew on that came ashore. We entertained them. And then all of a sudden, somebody stole the bell. Oh, God, it was hell on. The Lancashire Fusiliers went right way down to the beaches, rifles and bayonets and everything, and they stopped any naval person going aboard. And they told them, now then, if you don't give up the bell, we're coming in shooting. And they meant it as well. But anyway, the Navy gave up. They gave them.
And anyway, back.
Made them take it back and polish it again. And then all the crew that pinched the article, went back on that, and they got sort of confined to barracks, you know, confined to ship or whatever it was. But they got into trouble. I know they got the pay docked as well. So anyway, we got invited aboard the ship as well and entertained there. And that was it. That was one episode. Mm-hmm. But it was just shortly then the trouble broke out in Ishmaelia.
Ah, what sort of trouble was going
That's
on in
Ishmaelia? That's when the Egyptians rose up against us, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there were raiding some of the Mahdi quarters. And of course, some of the Lancashire Fusiliers, some of them on holiday, on leave at the time. And there was one particular place where they went in. The Arabs had broken in and about to rape the wife of one of the medical. He went in there and he blasted him with a Sten gun, cut him in two. And then they went around there and they started firing at the Gippos, sort of like, you know, really went to town on them. And then we were then flown back from there because the whole of Egypt flew up. And we had the trouble in Port Said.
Yes.
And now we came at that time. My wife was there, and my son was born in Ishmaelia, North Camp. And anyway, we came back from Aqaba down to Fayed on the trucks and came right way through the camp. And I saw the wife and children and little kiddie, you know. She I went straight past them all the way to Port Said. I never saw them again for about 3 months or something like that, you know. But anyway, we got into Port Said.
What was happening in Port Said?
And we pulled into a camp, what do you call it, camp? 211, no, something, 5-1 transit camp, I believe it was. But anyway, we crossed across the harbour and we went into Port Said itself. And this is where the trouble started. And then we got with the carriers, the whole battalion was lined up, and the commanding officer was there with us, and they got to the gates, and the gates was closed, and they ordered them to open the gates, and they wouldn't do it, so the carriers smashed through into the gates, and then they had a crowd of the people then, you know, coming out, and
Who were these people in the camp?
The Egyptians. And they had women and children in front of them.
Yes.
So, anyway, we had two snipers on each side. And there was a commanding officer who was in the middle of us. And as we went in, the carriers in front, somebody started throwing missiles at us, you know. There's all sorts came on, bricks and everything. And one hit the CO on the arm. And the bloke just pulled his, what do you call it, back on his brain gun. He said, no, don't for God's sake fire. Yeah. Then he said, no, look. Bloke in the blue galabia on your right. He's a dog. Pick him off. Bang. Off he went. Then another one on the other side. These were the agitators at the back, you know, calls them. And he was picking them off like that all the time.
Who was
then
spotting them?
One of our snipers.
Oh, but I mean, was it the commanding officer who was nominated?
Oh, yes. Target? Yeah, he'd already had them.
Yes.
And because, as he said, you know, so and so and so. The man with the, what do you call it, blue galabia, whatever it was, you know, and pick him off, and that was it. And picking them all, the agitators. Then they put up the sign that stop and disperse. Then they fired over the heads of them. boom, they went. But anyway, a lot of the women and children and that came back again. So we had the carriers, which were the wasps with the little flamethrowers. So I had them in front, there was two of them. Now they wouldn't disperse, and they told them to disperse, then they wouldn't. So all they did is let fly with the oil. Oh, the flood, it went then. Cleared the bloody place. Women and that didn't like oil on them, did they? And that was it. So we cleared the place and went right away into the centre of Portishead. And we took over the big hotel there, the Nappy Hotel it was. And we sandbagged it and took up positions all over the place. And we had companies in the town, you know what I mean? Any sort of disturbances, they dealt with them. Well, we had to get sandbags from the beach. And one of our trucks went out to get the sandbags. Sergeant Steele and about seven blokes, I believe it was. And they took out a 3-tonner. And they took the wrong turn and went into the Gippo camp. The driver realised what happened, so he just carried on straight away around and come out. And they fired on our chap, but they slung themselves on the floor and never retaliated. And we got out of there. They got out there all right. They got back down to the beaches. Then the commanding officer then sent for the Welby Everard, his name. Bloody good commanding officer, that man. And he sent for the commandant of the Gippo Army.
From the camp?
Yeah. He sent for him. And I was on guard, the Sergeant Major then. And he said, when he comes, march him in, Sergeant Major. And I looked at him and I said, well, he's a bloody general, you know. March him in, he said. So he came up there, and of course, as the sentries on there, they give him a salute, you know, and he didn't know what to do. He came in, guided him in, they opened the door, and they gave him a quick march. He didn't know what to do, he said, you know. Anyway, went up and he sought the cut the CO, and then he let fly at him. He told him, he said, if you ever fire on my soldiers again, he says, I'll come in, he said, and annihilate you. And he said, and I'll shoot you bloody personally. March him out. And that was it. Out he went. They had no more trouble from the camp. The Gippo stayed in that camp and never came out of it.
What was the strength of the Egyptian army in that camp? Do you know what the strength of the Egyptian army was in that camp?
I don't know what they were up there. But I know that at that time, it was also the Gippo army was in the Sinai Desert. And we had a company up there on the what is it, El Fadan Bridge. And they kept the whole Gippo army in there. One company.
What were they doing, the people on the Gulf? Were they there permanently, or were they just there during the trouble?
Who's that?
Your company.
Oh, yeah, just for the trouble.
Just for the trouble, they were deployed on that bridge.
Right. To make sure none of them came in. You see, there were sisters inside Ishmaelia.
Right.
And, of course, a lot of trouble going on there. We used to patrol up and down the canals, and used to get fired on by the Gippos, and even the correspondents that were out there, you know, came on down on the carriers. They kept their heads down there. And then we used to tell them what happened. But there was one particular time I was in the camp, and I had some of my company were on the bridge, the Nappy Bridge, you call it, and next to them was our post. Next to them was an RAF signals truck.
Yeah.
No, across the bridge on the other side was a convent, and that there. And anyway, the Egyptians broke into the convent, and they killed his sister Anthony. And that was it. And of course, we opened it. You had to go somewhere. The Lancashire Fusiliers went in there and they sorted the Gippos out. But anyway, this particular day, we were a bloke came over the bridge with a barrel full of oranges and stuff like that, right neck in between our post and the signals truck, and he was selling oranges. And then suddenly turned around one of our sentries. He said, "I'm just going over to get some eggs." And when he got to the bridge, he started looking back and moving forward quickly, and they shouted out to him. I said, "Get him." And just then, this bloody what they call it went up and blew the signals truck, and our what they call it, I got two of our chaps were killed there. But we got this, the Gippo that went down.
How did you get him? Was he shot?
Shot him.
What happened to the signals truck?
Pardon? Well, got caught, all caught fire, and there was a couple of the RAF chaps were killed as well. Was destroyed completely.
What were they doing? Were they providing you with communication?
Well, that's right. There were communications, like, you know, what was happening up to Div headquarters and everything.
Oh, so they were acting effectively as a SIGS detachment for you.
That's right.
Yes.
For us as well. And anyway, then this trouble broke out on the Carrickall, which is the police station. Oh. And they were firing on our people, and we fired back at them.
What was this? Who was firing? The police?
The Egyptian police.
Yes.
And we fired back at them. Then we had a tank came up, went along, what they call it, turned in, went into the, what they call it, and told them to come out to surrender, and they wouldn't. So it went right away up to the door, and I fired a blank. You should have seen the coppers come out the pretty window. Came out there, and they were just knocking them off. And there was the finish was about 50 of them. We laid them all along the Sweetwater Canal, and that was it.
Well, they were shot down as they came out, or they?
Yeah, they came out, they just opened fire on them. Mm. And anyway, that was it, and the rest of them surrendered. And the Lancashire Fusiliers at that time were in the town, and they cleared them all up as well. And they're just going around us, rounding them up.
What happened to the Egyptian police who were captured then? Where were they taken?
Oh, well, they just made prisoners, and that was it. Even in their own cells, they had.
Oh, they were locked up in the cells.
Yeah, the old place there, and they were carted by the Lancashire Fusiliers. Mm. They had decided what to do with them. But there was a price paid on the commanding officer's head by the Egyptians, you know, of the Lancashire Fusiliers.
But they were offering a reward for
them.
Yeah,
a reward to them. It never came anywhere. Mm. And it was just shortly after that when we were then posted back home.
When you were clearing trouble in the streets in Ismailia, when you were clearing, you said if there was trouble in the streets in Ismailia, you would clear it.
Yeah.
Or port side, you'd clear it.
Yeah.
What sort of drills were you using to deal with disorder in the streets? How would you be laid out, and how would you act?
Well, they're just going through the town looking for the troublemakers and that, and that was it. And then, as I say, we had the Naffy
hotel
we had, and we just guarding that.
But if you were out,
you should go out on patrol.
Yes. What strength?
That was it. Well, they're taken out in a platoon strength.
Yes.
And then going up and down the streets looking for any of the troublemakers and people like that who's causing any trouble, arresting them, you know, anybody that started, you know, throwing things or anything like that, pump, just shot them. Mm. We kept it down anyway.
That first occasion, you said you went into the camp, there was a big mob and there were women and children.
That's
as well.
Right, yeah.
How was the battalion actually drawn up to do that?
Well, there was a company in front.
You said you had carries in front of everybody.
That's right, yeah.
Then a company.
That's right.
And what were they?
The rest of them in support.
You're in support. What was the Ford? How was the Ford company deployed? How was it?
Well, the whole battalion didn't go in there, actually.
No,
there was only about three companies. There's another company left back in the camp.
Yeah. Well, you've got one company on the bridge, hadn't
that's
you?
Right,
one company
yeah.
in camp.
That's right.
But the company that did go to the camp, how was it actually laid out and on the ground?
In the camp?
No, when it advanced into the camp.
Oh, into the town.
Yeah.
Oh, well, just advanced in line. You know what I mean? It had a frontage, about 20 men in front, and then same at the back, going like that, you see. And then you had the snipers and the Bren guns on each corner.
So they were on the flanks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you had the snipers on each side.
It sounded all like a sort of box.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And then you had the two snipers on that side, one on each side. The commanding officer in the middle, he controlled.
Yes.
The snipers, and told them what they had to do.
So how was he doing that? Just by voice?
Voice.
By shouting?
No, just by voice. Mm. Voice and contact, that's it. But as I said, we cleared the whole streets, and that was it, and they settled down then. We moved back into this camp afterwards, when sort of peace has settled, you know.
Yes.
And that was it, yeah. And then we came back to Ismailia, North Camp, and others took over from us in Port Said.
And you were saying you were by that time you were a sergeant major. When were you promoted to sergeant major?
When I came back in from what they call it in 1953.
Yes.
Yeah. When I was.